This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at numberfire.com, and this is episode 169, nice, of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. Thank God for Ryan Fitzpatrick and Vance McDonald on Monday night, because week three was a bad one. It was actually one of the worst weeks that I can remember as a fantasy football analyst. Looking back on last week's matchups podcast, Fitzpatrick and McDonald were probably my two best calls. The McDonald one was definitely the best one because most people were already on Ryan Fitzpatrick. I was into Will Fuller and Sammy Watkins, and they did do some things. And Jimmy Garoppolo was fine before tearing his ACL. But Phillip Rivers was someone that I wasn't very high on, and he came through. Blake Bortles laid an egg. The Dolphins and Patriots rushing attacks were abominations. Kenny Stills ended up scoring. James Washington wasn't a good deep sleeper pick. It just wasn't a good week for me. I don't think the process was that wrong for a lot of the picks, but the results were definitely not great. And that'll happen. These weeks are going to happen. Over the long run, though, the hope is that the good weeks far outweigh the bad weeks. The hope is that you're tilting your face off far less than you're taking your pants off. Anyway, it's fortunately a new week, which means we've got a whole lot to go through on today's matchups podcast. Before doing so, I wanted to let you guys know about FanDuel's Sunday Million Contest, which offers you a chance at winning $1 million for less than $10. For just a $9 entry fee, you can compete for $3 million in prizes, including $1 million to first place. For more info, visit FanDuel.com and enter today. A player that I mentioned on this week's 15 Transactions podcast as an ad was Andy Dalton, and it's because both of his matchup this week, but also his matchups in upcoming weeks. But since this is a matchups pod, let's just look at his week 4 game. He's in Atlanta in a domed environment, and the game itself is one of the higher over-unders on this week's slate. The Falcons' defense and secondary hasn't been all that special this year. They've surrendered big passing days to both Cam Newton and Drew Brees. And according to NumberFire's expected points model, when adjusted for strength of opponent, the Falcons are owners of the ninth worst secondary in football. They're banged up, and Dalton himself hasn't really been that bad from a fantasy perspective to start the year. Not only that, but ever since Bill Lazor became offensive coordinator for Cincinnati, Dalton's thrown multiple touchdown passes in 12 of 17 games. It's been a pretty friendly offense for Andy Dalton and that passing attack. So I've got Andy Dalton as a low-end QB1 this week, and I'd be starting him over someone like Andrew Luck or both quarterbacks that I'm down on that I'll get to in a second. Another AFC North quarterback that I'm into this week is Joe Flacco. The Steelers have been bad against deep balls this year, allowing the second most in the league, and we saw that on full display against the Buccaneers on Monday night. Meanwhile, Flacco currently ranks third in air yards across the league, and his average depth of target is in the top 10. He's been chucking the deep ball, and he's been a decent enough fantasy quarterback to start the year as a result of that. So in a game that's in Pittsburgh with a strong over-under on the week, Flacco makes sense as a quarterback streamer. There are deep plays this week at quarterback like Case Keenum or Mitch Trubisky, but with so many strong options off the waiver wire, it's not necessary to risk their low floors. I mean, both of them could sincerely have strong performances in week 4. I don't mind Mitch Trubisky and Case Keenum. We also know that Keenum and Trubisky have struggled mightily at times this year. Now, another guy who's struggled but at least has some history of being competent is Eli Manning. And I like Eli Manning this week. The Saints secondary has been dreadful to start the year, which really isn't something that many of us thought we'd say entering the season. But they've been bad, and they just lost a piece of that secondary in Patrick Robinson, who's now on injured reserve with a broken ankle. So now we're looking at Eli Manning against an underperforming secondary that's banged up in New York in a game with a strong over-under. That's pretty sweet. And the other thing to note here too is that with Eli Manning, you're probably worried about pressure. You're worried about something like week 2 happening, where Dallas just consistently was able to generate pressure against the Giants line. The good news is that the Saints haven't been good at doing that so far this year. They rank 4th worst in quarterback hits, and they're bottom 10 in sacks. So if Dalton and Flacco aren't available, Eli is also an option. One guy I'm a little bit down on versus consensus this week is Ryan Fitzpatrick. And when I say that I'm down a little bit, I mean that I would be playing Andy Dalton over him this week, and maybe I would consider Joe Flacco. Fitzpatrick has obviously been doing things in fantasy that aren't sustainable. He's completing 60% of his deep ball passes, and over 47% of his yardage total has come from throws that traveled 15 or more yards through the air. That just doesn't happen across an entire season. That's not sustainable. Now he's going to Chicago to face a really good Bears defense. And it's really an environment and situation that he hasn't faced yet this year. The Bucs offense has yet to be on the road against a good defense. I will say, the Bears have actually been pretty mediocre at preventing big plays, and that plays into Ryan Fitzpatrick's favor. But they should make the Buccaneers one-dimensional, and the overall matchup and regression that's going to hit Fitzpatrick eventually is a big, big concern. So he's a QB2 rather than a QB1 this week. And I also don't like Jared Goff as much as the consensus does here in Week 4. Minnesota is coming to town after a brutal loss, and a lot of fantasy owners may look at what Minnesota's defense did against Josh Allen and get excited about Goff's matchup. But Josh Allen did a lot with his legs to finish as a QB4 last week, and the Vikings defense was consistently put in bad situations in that game. The Bills' average drive against Minnesota last week started on their own 40-yard line. The fact of the matter is, Minnesota still has a really good defense, and it's one that prevented Jimmy Garoppolo from scoring 10 fantasy points in Week 1, and Aaron Rodgers posted QB19 numbers in Week 2. Goff is fine for a floor given the weapons that he has, but I do worry a bit about his ceiling. I think it's going to be a Philip Lindsay week as long as the team has moved on from the whole ejection thing that went down this past Sunday. The Broncos are underdogs this week against Kansas City, and when the Broncos are trailing, you know they're going to want to utilize their pass-catching backs. We didn't get to see that fully in Week 3 because Lindsay punched a dude and he got ejected, but in Week 2 against Oakland, where Denver trailed for a lot of that game, Lindsay played over 42% of the team's snaps. Devontae Booker played 33% of them, and early down back Royce Freeman was on the field for only 24% of them. The matchup against the Chiefs is a sweet one too. They rank 31st in success rate to running backs this year on the ground, so they've been super inefficient at stopping the run, but they also have allowed the third highest success rate to running backs through the air. The matchup is there, and Lindsay should hypothetically be on the field a decent bit in this matchup. He's a strong play in Week 4. And you've also got to like Sony Michel this week. Without Rex Burkhead, Michel should be the goal line back in New England, which is a role that looked to be Burkhead's entering the year. He played that role when he was healthy during the second half of last season, which is part of the reason as to why he was such a machine in fantasy football. But enough about Rex Burkhead. He's on IR. Let's talk about Sony Michel. In Week 3, Michel ended up playing 48% of New England snaps in a super negative game script. He handled 14 of a possible 18 attempts, and he even tied James White with 3 targets. The usage was absolutely there. Now the team will face Miami in New England as pretty big favorites. That should create a positive game script. Miami's been slightly above average at stopping the run this year, but volume is king in fantasy football, and Sony Michel should see plenty of volume here in Week 4. I also think we could see a big Aaron Jones game in Week 4 for Green Bay. Buffalo was great defensively last week, but they're still 10-point underdogs to Green Bay, which could force a nice positive script for Packers running backs. Aaron Jones has been the most effective rusher for the Packers since the beginning of 2017. And even after not playing in Weeks 1 and 2 with a suspension, he ended up seeing the most carries in the team's backfield in Week 3. Now, the snap rate wasn't very strong, but the usage was. And there's certainly a chance that in a positive script, they worry less about utilizing a pass protector like Jamal Williams, and they just go with a better runner in Aaron Jones. He's sort of kind of a deeper play, but I do think he's worthy of a flex spot this week. As much as I love Kerryon Johnson and think he's the best running back in the Detroit Lions backfield, hence the reason I talked about him on this week's 15 Transactions podcast, I think he's being looked at too highly by fantasy analysts this week. I see him more as a flex, but it looks like he's being ranked as an RB2. We still don't know if he's going to see goal line touches. In fact, evidence suggests that he won't just yet, considering Blunt has more red zone looks. So until we start seeing that usage, it's tough to crown him an every week starter, even though he is, as I said, the best running back in the Detroit Lions backfield. And I do worry about the matchup against Dallas. The Cowboys allowed over 100 yards to Chris Carson last week, but it also took Chris Carson 32 carries to get there. Dallas has been about average against running backs to start the year according to NumberFire's metrics, but I'm worried that this game is going to see a fairly slow pace, which would limit opportunities. Detroit is 17th in the NFL in neutral situation pace, while Dallas is dead last. And with Dallas at home, there's a higher likelihood that they'll have some control over this game. Though I should note that the matchup is a lot better with Sean Lee sidelined for the Cowboys. I do think that Johnson is fine this week, but more as a flex. I'd be hesitant to play him as an RB2. As you loyal listeners know, I've picked on Derrick Henry a lot this year. But I'm even worried about Deion Lewis now. This matchup against Philly is one where Lewis should hypothetically see the field a lot more than Henry, and I think that he will. But Tennessee's offense has been completely dreadful, and Philly's front is one of the toughest in the league for opposing running backs. It's just always smart to associate your backs with strong offenses, and that's not what you're getting with Lewis and Henry right now. Deion Lewis might get some cheap catches, but even if that's the argument for Lewis this week, you still have to be nervous considering Philadelphia ranks 3rd in success rate allowed to backs through the air this season. My deep play of the week this week at running back is Austin Eckler. In five games where the Chargers have won by 10 or more points since Eckler entered the league last year, he's seen an uptick of 4 attempts per game on average. That's basically 3 times his normal volume. They're 10.5-point favorites in this one, and Eckler is seeing more work here in 2018 than he did in 2017. So that uptick that I talked about should be even higher or more significant because he already has a higher floor than he did last year. If this game is a blowout, we should expect the Chargers to rest Melvin Gordon a bit. That's what we saw against Buffalo in week 2, and that makes Eckler a really nice flex play. At wide receiver this week, don't overlook Sterling Shepard. I've already talked about the Giants passing game's plus matchup against New Orleans, so I won't get into that again, but Shepard himself has a 17.3% target share this season, and the Giants are going to be without Evan Ingram. Shepard's played over 67% of his snaps from the slot this year, and now he won't be competing for looks in that area of the field against the pass-catching tight end. So the matchup plus a potential uptick in targets really makes Shepard a strong play this week. And man, I love me some John Brown in week 4. He has a target share north of 17% to start the year, which really isn't that bad for someone who stretches the field. Brown's actually 4th in the NFL in air yards through 3 weeks. And he's going to be facing a Steelers secondary, as I noted earlier, that's allowed the second most deep ball plays to start the season. It's truly a dream matchup for John Brown. The two wide receivers that I'm down on this week are being downgraded for similar reasons. We just haven't seen production, but a lot of people across the industry seem to still be viewing them as high-end wide receiver threes. Those two wide receivers are Amari Cooper and Larry Fitzgerald. Let's start with Cooper. He's had one good game of 3, and he currently sits with just a 16% target share in an offense that's led by a quarterback with the second lowest average depth of target in the league. All the while, Amari Cooper has 0 red zone targets. None. He'll see a lot of Denzel Ward in their matchup against the Browns, which will make things even more difficult. Now, it's not that I've lost all hope in Amari Cooper, but when you trot out a dude into your lineup who's not getting it done, it hurts you tremendously. You can't just keep doing it hoping for a turnaround. Sometimes you have to see a turnaround first and then go from there. If he's on your bench when that big game happens, so be it. Your process was not wrong. And that's really what's going on with Larry Fitzgerald too. I actually really like his matchup this week, but he's not seeing a ton of volume because the Cardinals offense is running so few plays. The hope is that things get a lot better with Josh Rosen under center, and maybe they will, but just be patient and let it play out before you throw Fitz into your wide receiver 3 spot. It's just not worth it given what we've seen so far. For the deep wide receiver play, I'm actually going to give you guys 2 of them this week. It's your lucky day, but it's probably your unlucky day because I'll probably get these wrong. The first deep play is Courtland Sutton. According to Pro Football Focus, Sutton has run just 13 fewer routes than Emmanuel Sanders and just 4 fewer routes than Demaryius Thomas this year. And over the last 2 weeks, which were 2 games with an unfavorable game script for Denver, he played 78% and 82% of the Broncos' snaps. Now in week 4, he gets a Kansas City defense that's faced 141 pass attempts against them this year, which is the most in the league. So in a game that's projected to see a good number of points, do not overlook Courtland Sutton. And another dude I like is Taylor Gabriel. Anthony Miller is day-to-day with a dislocated shoulder, and Miller's been playing roughly half of Chicago's snaps this year. Gabriel's been hovering in the 80-85% range, and he's seen over 21% of the Bears' targets this season. He also gets a plus matchup against a Tampa Bay secondary that ranks 3rd worst according to NumberFire's metrics. He's definitely more of a desperate or waiver wire play, but the matchup and peripherals are actually there for Taylor Gabriel. It would just be nice if his quarterback was good at throwing footballs. As usual, instead of giving you guys tight ends to bench, I'm just going to talk through 2 guys that you should be playing. Because across the league right now, if a tight end is breathing, he's basically usable in fantasy football. But I do like David Njoku this week. He hasn't seen a large target share so far this year at about 15%, and when Baker Mayfield entered the game last week, David Njoku only saw 2 targets. But only 4 tight ends have run more routes than David Njoku this season, and his matchup against Oakland is actually pretty decent. The Raiders are allowing about 4 more yards per play to the middle of the field versus an average NFL team this season. With Baker Mayfield throwing the rock, David Njoku has some life. And if you want to dig a little bit deeper at tight end, Austin Hooper is an interesting streaming option. He's going to face a Cincinnati team that allowed the 5th most receptions to tight ends last year, and they currently sit in 3rd in tight end receptions allowed here in 2018. It's a game with a high over-under, which means we could obviously see a lot of touchdowns scored. And Hooper, if there's one really good thing about him, it's that he's 2nd among tight ends in targets within the opponent's 10-yard line this year. So maybe he'll find the end zone in this one. 2 defenses that you could look to using this week are Green Bay and Seattle. As I mentioned earlier, Minnesota's defense wasn't totally torched by Buffalo. They were put in really bad situations on the field. It's still an offense you can stream defenses against, especially since they're on the road in Green Bay with the Packers as 10-point favorites. And then Seattle's going to be part of a game that could just be ugly. They're on the road, and that's really annoying, but they're still favorites, and the game has a sub-40-point over-under. That means there should be a fairly high floor for the Seahawks defense against a quarterback who's making his first NFL start. I hope Josh Rosen ends up being good, but that doesn't mean that there won't be any growing pains, especially in this uncreative offense that Mike McCoy is currently running in Arizona. That's it for this week's matchups pod, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone.